This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Liz Truss becomes UK's new prime minister. She's inheriting an acute economic and cost of living crisis that the country has been facing in decades. The European Union's top diplomat advises bloc members to stock up on weapons. Their arsenals are running out due to oversupplying Ukraine with arms. Indonesians hold nationwide rallies in protest at the government's decision to increase fuel prices amid soaring inflation. The top story, Liz Truss officially becoming Britain's new prime minister during a meeting with Queen Elizabeth at her castle in Scotland. The Queen has asked Truss to form a new government. She's succeeding Boris Johnson, who officially tendered his resignation to the Queen early in the day. Johnson was forced to step down as Conservative Party leader 2 months ago following mass resignations in his cabinet. Now, in his farewell speech, Johnson pointed to Britain's economic hardships and said his successor would do anything to help people cope with rising energy prices. Besides the cost of living crisis, Johnson's government was also hit by a series of scandals, including COVID lockdown parties, has promised unwavering support for his successor. The International Atomic Energy Agency says that urgent measures are needed to prevent a nuclear accident at the Russian-controlled Zaporizhzhia power plant in Ukraine. An IAEA report has expressed grave concerns about the condition of the plant, saying a nuclear safety and security protection zone needs to be established there. According to the report, damage has been observed at different locations at the facility, even close to the reactor buildings. Agency's chief, Rafael Grossi, is scheduled to brief the UN Security Council on the issue. Last week, an IAEA delegation under Grossi visited the plant amid warnings of a nuclear disaster after repeated shelling of the area. Moscow and Kyiv traded blame for the attacks. Early in the day, the two sides once again accused each other of new shelling of the facility. The European Union's foreign policy chief says that member states are running low on weapons because of the scale of arms deliveries to Ukraine.
The military stocks of most member states has been, I wouldn't say exhausted, but depleted in a high proportion because we have been providing a lot of capacity to the Ukrainians.
Now, Borrell also said that he regrets that the EU did not begin training Ukrainian forces last year when some member states asked for it. Now, this follows informal discussions last week on EU-level military training mission in Ukraine. The Union has already provided 2.5 billion euros in military assistance to Kyiv since the war began in that country in late February. The figure includes a 500 million euro aid package approved in July. Activist and political analyst John Bosnich says that U.S. pressure on its European allies to actively support Ukraine increases the risk of a direct war with Russia.
United States pressure on Germany and other countries to get themselves directly involved in the conflict. So that risk rises as much as America pushes its colonies, which the EU has become, as much as it pushes the colonies to do what it says. Now, the people in Europe are demonstrating. There are great numbers of people who are opposed to this situation, and that is the dampening factor which might reduce the risk. In the meantime, Russia is showing on the battlefield that the battle is so lopsided that for Europe to enter on the Ukrainian side, it would involve a serious multi-state war that would probably be called another world war. Whether it would become an atomic world war is not yet known, but this is definitely the threat of a world war that would spread from the local region to other areas around the world, other areas of conflict. This is a very, very dangerous crisis.
Germany says it will keep two of its nuclear power plants on standby to deal with potential energy shortages in the coming winter and ease high prices for consumers.
For me, the right conclusion to draw from this stress test is that we should keep this option after the end of the normal life of the nuclear power plants, and that we should put the two nuclear power plants in southern Germany in reverse so that they can be used again or continue to be used if the situation requires it, and that we do not deprive ourselves of this option.
The plants were about to shut down at the end of this year, but they would be in operation until next April. The measures are taken as Germany is struggling to come up with alternatives to Russian gas. Like many other European countries, Germany is grappling with an energy crisis after Russia shut down its gas supplies to the continent. Before the beginning of the Ukraine war, more than half of the gas consumed in Germany was imported from Russia. And that has caused a hike in fuel prices and ultimately drove up inflation rates. Fears of recession are now growing as Germany's industrial orders slumped for the sixth consecutive month in July. Staying with Europe, Italy is also feeling the strain of record energy prices. The government has announced a plan to turn down the heating in homes and businesses in the winter as part of efforts to reduce energy consumption. Now, under the plan, the temperature in apartment blocks and other public buildings will be regulated at 19 degrees Celsius, which is 1 degree lower than before. For industrial premises, it will be at 17 degrees Celsius. France is also trying to reduce energy consumption. The Vert Marine Company, which operates pools and ice rinks across France, says it will close nearly 30 facilities due to soaring heating costs. The company says its annual energy bill has increased by over sixfold to $99 million. It's also planning to lay off some 6,000 staff. The move has infuriated the sports and education groups. The French Swimming Federation has demanded immediate reopening of the pools. In Indonesia, people have held nationwide protests as anger is mounting over the government's decision to increase fuel prices. The capital, Jakarta, ralliers gathered outside the parliament building, where more than 3,000 forces were deployed. Thousands of police forces have also been guarding the city's gas stations. On Monday, university students staged similar rallies demanding the government reverse its decision. Indonesia raised subsidized fuel prices by around 30%. Labor unions say the new prices will hurt workers and the urban poor the most. People in the besieged Gaza Strip have held a big rally to mark the first anniversary of the Gilboa prison break. A year ago, six Palestinians humiliated the Tel Aviv regime through their daring and heroic escape from the maximum security prison. Ashraf Shannon reports from Gaza.
Palestinians have staged a rally in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to mark the first anniversary of the Gilboa prison break, also known as the Freedom Tunnel operation. In September of last year, six Palestinian detainees escaped from the Gilboa maximum security prison in occupied northern Palestine. They managed to get out through an underground tunnel in the prison's drainage system. Hamas resistance movement has vowed to secure the release of Palestinian detainees.
On the first anniversary of the heroic Gilboa escape operation, we salute the six prisoners. Securing the release of all prisoners is a top priority for Palestinian resistance factions. The six escapees will be on top of the list of any future prisoner swap deals with the Zionist entity.
The Israeli regime violates all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the Fourth Geneva Convention. The Israeli prison service keeps Palestinian inmates under deplorable conditions. The prisoners have also been subjected to systematic torture and harassment.
Palestinian prisoners escape from Israeli prisons because of the horrible detention conditions. They suffer from inhumane treatment, and hundreds of prisoners are held without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention.
Palestinian prisoners regularly go on hunger strikes and protest at the regime's administrative detention policy and harsh conditions. Palestinians are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
We call on all international human rights organizations to step in and protect Palestinian prisoners. There are thousands of prisoners, including children and women, in Israeli custody. Palestinian prisoners are suffering from all forms of oppression inside Israeli jails.
Currently, around 5,000 Palestinians, including children and women, are languishing inside Israeli jails.
People here consider Palestinians held in Israeli jails as political prisoners and freedom fighters who continue to struggle under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Meantime, Israel has announced plans to build a new settlement across the Green Line in Al-Quds. It's planned to include 700 residential units and a synagogue. The project will be constructed just meters from the Palestinian village of Beit Safafa, southeast of Al-Quds. Beit Safafa is almost entirely encircled by Israeli settlements. Tel Aviv has recently sped up the settlement construction on Palestinian lands, despite international outcry. All those settlements are deemed to be illegal under international law. We've talked to political commentator Saeed Nemer, and he explains what he calls Israel's ethnic cleansing in the occupied Palestinian territories.
In reality, we know that the Israeli plans generally is to take the Palestinian land and to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from the land and to replace them with these settlers coming from all over the world. Now, the whole thing is in Israel, it's about time that the international community should understand and should see exactly the Israeli answers to all their questions concerning what's going on in this area or the peace talks or whatever the two-state solution that they are suggesting sometimes, that the Israeli answer to all these are, you know, is going on with its settlements and with atrocities. And it's about time now for this international community to understand the nature of this colonialist, apartheid, racist regime in the area and should take some kind of action against this kind of a state.
Palestinians have held a massive funeral for a man who was fatally shot by Israeli forces during a raid in the occupied West Bank. Mohammed Sabana was killed in the Jenin refugee camp early this morning. Palestinian media says scores of Israeli troops, backed by armored vehicles, forcefully evacuated people, including women and kids, from their homes and held them outside. Several people were also arrested in the operation. Palestinian resistance groups have denounced the attack. They say that they won't give up their resistance, despite the regime's escalation at deadly rates across the occupied territories.
It is our right and the right of our people in the heavenly and earthly laws to fight the Israeli regime. What do we want? Will the regime come to kill us and we say thank you? Today we say to it, and the story of peace and negotiations is an incomplete past action that will not happen. It will not happen. Resistance today is the only language between us and the occupying regime. Victory is ours and defeat is for them.
Resistance movement Hamas also denounced the raid. Tensions remain high across the West Bank as Israel steps up its raids and violent crackdown against Palestinians almost on a daily basis. According to a Palestinian figure, the Israeli regime has killed around 120 people in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip since the beginning of this year. Monai Kendall joined us a short while ago and provided us with some details on the Israeli raid.
Well, the operation to Jenin area was in the first place meant to destroy or demolish the home of Palestinian martyr Raad Khazem, who carried out a shooting operation in Tel Aviv. Of course, Israeli forces raided the building where the apartment of Palestinian martyr Raad Khazem was included, and the clashes took place between Palestinians and Israeli forces. We are speaking about a large number of Israeli soldiers and vehicles. According to witnesses, over 100 Israeli military vehicles and a bulldozer raided Jenin area, and it was the largest number of forces storming the city in the recent months. Of course, we are speaking, according to Palestinian paramedics, about one Palestinian martyr, Mohammed Sabani. 16 Palestinians were wounded during this operation, and a number of Palestinians had been arrested also during the Israeli storm to Jenin area.
Yemen is once again facing fuel shortages despite a UN-brokered truce in that country that guarantees unhindered arrival of fuel ships at Hodeidah port. Abdullatif El-Mashali has more in his report from capital Sana'a.
For the first time since the beginning of the UN-brokered agreement in April, Yemenis are waiting in long lines in front of a limited number of operating petrol stations in the capital Sana'a to refill their vehicles. Yemen is suffering from a fresh fuel shortage due to Saudi Arabia's ongoing blockade.
The Saudi-led coalition wasn't sincere in implementing the terms of the armistice, and it did not open flights to other destinations from Sana'a Airport, and the salary issue still persists. The enemy is still using various methods to pressure the Yemenis, such as seizing fuel ships. But our leadership is studying the positions that can be taken regarding the Saudi violations of the UN armistice. There will be an appropriate decision at the right time, as the leadership is keen to move towards a solution to end the war.
The Yemeni Petroleum Company announced the implementation of the emergency plan and is distributing fuel to a few stations only. It held the United Nations responsible for the consequences of the Saudi violation, as it did not ensure the implementation of the armistice terms that included allowing fuel ships to enter Yemen without any restrictions.
The fuel crisis that the liberated areas are experiencing contradicts the United Nations statements that there is a smooth flow of entry of fuel ships into the port of Hodeidah. If there had been a smooth entry, we would not have experienced this crisis. The UN is a clear partner in the siege imposed on the Yemeni people because it did not force a Saudi-led coalition to implement what was agreed upon. We hold the United Nations responsible for the continued violations of the Saudi-led coalition.
Since the beginning of the truce, only 33 fuel ships out of 54 have entered the country. However, Riyadh is still holding 9 fuel ships despite them obtaining UN permits, and this is a clear violation of the UN brokered agreement.
Observers believe that the Saudi seizure of oil ships and the Yemeni army's recent military parades indicate a return to military escalation. They say the UN brokered truce has failed to achieve tangible results in relieving the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country. Abdullatif El-Washali, Sana'a.
The Canadian Prime Minister has condemned weekend stabbing attacks in Saskatchewan province. It says that such violent incidents have become all too common in this country. Justin Trudeau says that incidents are shocking and heartbreaking. At least 10 people were killed and 18 more got wounded in the stabbings that took place on Sunday. Police say they have found the body of one of the two brothers suspected of the attacks. A massive manhunt is underway for the other brother. This is one of the deadliest mass killings in Canadian history. While the worst incident of gun violence took place in 2020, it saw a man kill 22 people in Nova Scotia province. A U.S. federal judge has approved a request by former President Donald Trump to appoint a special master as the FBI investigates documents seized from his Florida home. The ruling enables Trump to designate a legal representative to review the bulk of seized evidence and decide what is off-limits to prosecutors. The judge has also ordered a halt to the Justice Department's investigation of the records. The department's probe looks at Trump's removal of government documents from the White House when he left the Oval Office in January 2021. FBI agents took 11 sets of such records, including top-secret files, from the ex-president's Mar-a-Lago residence during a raid last month. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Reading about Europe's energy crisis in newspapers or hearing about it on TV or radio news sections may shock everyone. But in reality, this crisis is worse than what is described in news headlines. With days left to the cold seasons in this continent, spiraling inflation and soaring energy crises have worried European families. Experts have warned that this crisis may transform into a catastrophe in the upcoming month. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details about this issue. The title of this article is, Europe's Energy Crisis May Become Catastrophe in Months Ahead. Stay with us, please. In the eyes of American news publication Foreign Policy, you have no idea how bad Europe's energy crisis is. With this headline, Foreign Policy wrote, "If most of the world is struggling with higher energy prices, Europe is being stretched on the rack, forcing European leaders to improvise bailout plans and emergency measures to spur consumers from damaging economic pain come winter." The biggest problem is spiking natural gas prices, which have been wreaking havoc across the continent, turbocharging inflation, hamstringing industries, and making ordinary people shudder when they get their power bills in the mail. European natural gas prices are now around 10 times higher than they were on average over the last decade and about 10 times pricier than in the United States. Alex Monton, an expert on global gas markets at Rapidan Energy Group, a consultancy, said European natural gas is so expensive it's like paying $500 for a barrel of oil, and these are the good months. Monton said things are at a crisis point, adding, "We have astronomic gas prices, and we are still a few months away from when gas demand really peaks during the winter. There is genuine uncertainty whether there will be sufficient gas to meet demand throughout the winter." Foreign Policy continued, "The gas problem is largely due to Russia-Ukraine conflict, which has disrupted exports of Russian gas to Europe and raised prices everywhere else. But it's not just the war. Alternative supplies of gas are expensive. Climate change has drained rivers so much that many of Europe's nuclear plants are offline. And there has been more than a decade of confusion among European policymakers about how to build shock absorbers into the system.
Power prices in both Germany and France reached record levels this week again, a reflection of the continent's ever-deepening power emergency. As nations buckle under the economic pressures, desperate times have called for desperate measures. Britain announced a painful 80% spike in the cap for household energy costs, while Germany increased bills by almost 500 euros. Time also on the energy crisis in Europe wrote, until blackouts begin or pump prices make driving actually unaffordable, most people generally think no more often of energy than of air. In many other places, especially Europe, the escalating situation is impossible to ignore, and it's going to get a lot worse. The worst has yet to come. In cold weather, the heating season, consumption draws mainly from fossil fuels, especially natural gas and oil, because most heating systems are still petroleum-fueled. Like every year, demand for natural gas will thus increase dramatically come winter. With Europe dependent on Russian imports for over 40% of its gas needs, and 46% for coal and 27% for oil, Russia has a lot of leverage. Euronews came with a worrying headline saying Europeans' worry cost of living crisis will cause social unrest. Many Europeans worry that high inflation due to the current energy crisis could fuel social unrest, protests and strikes, according to a new survey in France, Germany, Poland and the UK, conducted by pollster YouGov for the non-profit organization More in Common. The survey showed that cost of living has become the most important issue for Europeans in the four countries polled. A majority of people surveyed in all four countries said they were worried about social unrest in the coming month. In France, 4 in 10 people said they wanted to see a return of the Yellow Vest protest movement. Europeans are also feeling the impact of energy crisis. 1 in 5 people surveyed said they were drawing down from their savings, while 1 in 10 said they were skipping meals, the survey showed. Many are already struggling to cope, having to draw from savings or skip meals, particularly among disengaged and low-trust segments of the population, according to the report from More in Common entitled Navigating the Cost of Living Crisis. The vast majority believe this won't be a short crisis, with many seeing no end in sight. A majority of those surveyed in Poland and Germany said they were shopping around for better deals on groceries. A majority of those surveyed said they expected to cut down on heating this winter due to high energy prices. The survey also showed that the Europeans in the four said countries had low trust in their government's ability to handle the crisis. It found that while overall people don't trust any political party to handle the crisis, opposition parties, including populists, are making gains. In the UK, trust in the Labour Party was 20 points higher than in the Conservatives. In France, the party most trusted to deal with the crisis was the far-right National Rally. Pessimism seems to be widespread across Europe. Few Europeans expect that the cost of living crisis will end anytime soon, with over 1 in 3 people surveyed uncertain that it will ever end. Majorities in the countries polled would like to see an accelerated transition to renewable energies and believe renewables are a way to achieve energy independence faster. The polling was conducted online in late July with a sample of 7,000 adults from the UK, France, Germany, and Poland.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. If the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, when he left this dunya, if he, according to his own words, left behind two weighty things, the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam, and the two will not separate from each other till the Day of Judgment, according to that famous hadith of Al-Thaqalain, then we can be sure that there will be a strong bond between these two. Yes? If the Qur'an and the Ahlul Bayt have been promised to us to be together until the Day of Judgment, that means if I pull on one of them, the other one will also come, correct? Now, we have to be careful not to cut the link between these two practically in our lives. And so we will find, for example, that on the final days of the Holy Prophet's life, the Prophet is told by some that kafana kitabullah, the Quran suffices us, the Quran is enough for us. We don't need any other instruction. We all know that famous story, that Black Thursday, according to Ibn Abbas. So if we are very critical of what happened on those final days of the Holy Prophet's life, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then we also have to be careful not to cut this link the other way around, which is that we reach a point where, practically, of course, not that we want this or we actually think this way, but we practically also don't cut out the Qur'an from the equation. It's kind of funny to think about it, that we might call out others for getting rid of one side of the equation, but then we practically, God forbid, it happens that. So for us, as Shia, you know, you hear this sometimes from people. They'll say, rightfully so, they'll say that, look, if we follow the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, we are practically following the Qur'an, because that's what the Ahlul Bayt teach us, correct? And that is true. That is right. The thing is, though, that the Imams themselves have taught us this, that look, we go back to the Qur'an ourselves. In other words, just because you're following our example, that's wonderful, but you have to have a relationship with the Qur'an itself. This is how we do it. That's what they've said. Look at all the tens and hundreds, if not hadiths in regards to the Qur'an, to the point that they say, look, the measuring stick is the Qur'an. If anyone says we said something and it goes against the Qur'an, you can be sure that we didn't say it. So they are referring to us back to the book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yes. What we want to do tonight, inshallah, some of the verses of the Qur'an that the Imams, or not Imams, but Imam Hussein in particular, would use to answer people. Muhammad bin Ash'ath, son of Ash'ath bin Qais, I've talked about him once before, Ash'ath bin Qais is a problematic person. Although he was on the side of Ali ibn Abi Talib, but there's some crazy stuff this guy did, and we have evidence that shows that he was the one who caused the major problems in Siffin, actually. Well, he has two sons, Muhammad and Qais. All right? And he has a grandson. And he has a daughter. They're all problematic. His daughter poisoned Imam Hassan, for example. You know. Okay? Ja'da. Okay? So now we get an idea of what's going on here. How problematic this individual is. If you're a good person, man, not all of your kids aren't going to be problematic, inshallah. All right? Muhammad bin Ash'ath, who is he? Well, he's the one who apprehended and took in Musnad bin Aqil. And came on Ashura. Like, dude, you're already going to Jahannam. You don't have to add more Jahannam to your report card. Like, also, you know what? Let me make sure I go to Jahannam face first. So he goes to on Ashura to Karbala as well. All right, stand in the back at least. Don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut at least. No, I want even more Jahannam. Right? Think about it. You go to the restaurant, like, the waiter asks you, like, would you like more Jahannam with your Jahannam? Yes, I would like to also get myself in more trouble by saying something disrespectful to Imam Hussein. So he tells Imam Hussein, he says something along to the effect of this whole thing of you and your relationship with the Holy Prophet, and you're always, you know, leeching off of that. And why should we respect you? What link do you have to the Holy Prophet? Something like that. The Holy Imam, he responds, he says, Inna Allah astafa Adama wa Nuhan wa Ala Ibrahim wa Ala Imran ala al-alamin. Hey, Muhammad bin Ash'ath, I don't know who your pops is, but my father goes back to Ibrahim. My father, grandfather, all of that, Rasulullah through Fatimah Zahra, Ali ibn Abi Talib, these ones, they all go back to who? Their lineage goes back there, to Ali Ibrahim, and the Quran is saying Allah has chosen Ali Ibrahim over all the people. Who's your pops go back to? Just a verse like this. What does he have to say in response to this? He can't say anything. What, is there a verse that's about him? The closest I can think of a verse that has to do with this guy is something like Tabbat yada Abi Lahabin wa tab. You know? So you see, the Quran, brothers and sisters, is qawlul fasl. It finishes the job. And if a person has a good grasp of it, really, it does wonders for them in their personal life, social life, with others, debating with others, in their own home, their family, everything. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. That the Ahlul Bayt lived lives full of Quran. And finally, this third one that I want to mention, and you've probably heard this one, this story we all know, in the palace of the governor of Medina. When Imam Hussein is summoned after Muawiyah dies and Yazid becomes Khalifa, what happens is Imam Hussein is summoned by the governor of Medina. Marwan happens to be there too. Marwan used to be the governor of Medina. Muawiyah had removed him from that position, but Marwan is still hanging out over there. And so when Imam Hussein comes and they ask him for bay'ah, he says, no, let me go, we'll talk later. Marwan is there. Marwan says, don't let him go, because if you don't get bay'ah from him now, it's now or never. Just like, get rid of him right now. And of course, we've heard the story of Imam Hussein. He gets angry and shows a little bit of the wrath of Allah to this person. Now, what happens is, there is a little story on the side here as well, a little thing that the Imam says. He uses a verse of the Quran that we all know of. He says, Marwan says, it says here that Marwan says to him, I won't let you go until you give bay'ah to Yazid. You children of Ali have the grudge of Abu Sufyan in your hearts. Of course they do. What, you expect anything else? These enemies of Islam? And it should be the case that you are their enemies and they are your enemies. Marwan says this. What does Imam Hussein say? He says, go away from here. You are rijs. We, on the other hand, are a family of tahara. إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهِ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْسِ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَهِرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. You see, if you got what it takes for verses like these to apply to you, if you've taken care of your akhirah, inshallah, and your relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, verses like these will apply. And so the Imam uses this to just quiet down anybody who has any claim to be important or special, especially if they're going to stand in the face of the Ahlul Bayt. So these are just a few cases where the Imam uses verses of the Quran to close the mouth of others. Oh, Hussein, you live forever.
To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The energy crisis in Europe is getting worse day by day. With the escalation of illegal US and European sanctions against Russia after the country's special operations in Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin reduced gas exports to Europe. This action has worsened the energy crisis in Europe and caused people to worry about the coming cold days, especially the winter season. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. The British daily The Guardian wrote, the chief executive of Shell has said gas shortages across Europe are likely to last for several winters to come, raising the prospect of continued energy rationing as governments across the continent push to develop alternative supplies. Cuts to the supply of Russian gas since its special operation in Ukraine have plunged European countries into a devastating energy crisis, driving up wholesale prices to leave consumers facing huge bills and the highest rates of inflation since 1980s. Speaking at a press conference in Norway recently, Ben van Woerden, the CEO of Shell, said the situation could persist for several years. He said, it may well be that we will have a number of winters where we have to somehow find solutions. Van Woerden said solutions to the energy crisis would have to found through efficiency savings, through rationing, and a very, very quick build out of alternatives. His comments come as Europe's biggest economies brace for a tough winter of soaring inflation and the threat of recession, as record increases in gas and electricity bills pile pressure on households and businesses across the continent. China's Global Times cited international affairs experts as saying the European Union has turned to the United States in order to deal with its worsening energy chaos, making Washington the biggest profiteer of Russia-Ukraine conflict. They said the U.S. has gained the most from the energy crisis by opening up a huge market for American gas suppliers, tightening its grip on Europe and hurting Russia's key export. The United States exported 68% of its LNG sources to Europe during the first 6 months of 2022 compared to only 35% last year. The experts note that the EU, ahead of the winter, will have to ramp up imports of liquefied natural gas LNG from alternative supplies, mostly American LNG companies. According to Lin Bokyong, director of the China Center for Energy Economies Research at Xiamen University, Europe is determined to reduce its energy dependence on Russian gas, therefore accepting the huge difference in gas cost of LNG compared to pipeline due to transport cost, as the world's energy landscape is undergoing a huge restructuring due to geopolitical factors accompanied by soaring prices and supply shortages. Zhao Lijian, spokesperson of China's foreign ministry, blamed the Ukraine conflict and Europe's energy crisis on the United States and commented that the so-called winter sitting across the ocean and profiting from the crisis is Washington. Zhao also said recently that he is aware of reports that the gap between gas prices and the European and U.S. markets is now as much as 10 times a record high. In June, the Russian gas giant Gazprom curtailed its gas supply to Europe by 40%. Then it drastically cut the deliveries through the pipeline to about 20% of its capacity in July. On Wednesday, August 31st, Gazprom suspended natural gas flows via Nord Stream 1 pipeline, saying the stoppage would last for 3 days. However, on Friday, September 2nd, the company said it extended the shutdown over a technical fault, providing no time frame for a reopening. The Euronews website explains more about the issue, saying finance ministers from the G7 have pledged to impose a cap on the price of Russian oil in a bid to limit the Kremlin's revenues and ability to fund its operation in Ukraine, while also curtailing the war's impact on energy prices and inflation. The minister said they would impose the cap by barring insurance or shipping companies from helping Russia sell oil at prices above the set limit. The decision follows discussions at the group summit earlier this year and aims at solving one of the vexing problems with sanctions against Russia. Global oil prices have risen up on fears of restricted supply, which has only fattened the Kremlin's revenues. Meanwhile, skyrocketing energy prices have fed inflation that is squeezing consumers in rich and poor countries alike and threatens to push Europe into recession. In a statement issued by Germany, which chairs the G7 this year, the minister said they confirm our joint political intention to finalize and implement a comprehensive prohibition of services which enable maritime exportation of Russian-origin crude oil and petroleum products globally. They added providing those services would only be allowed if the oil and petroleum products are purchased at or below a price determined by the broad coalition of countries adhering to and implementing the price cap. The statement did not give any proposed figure for a potential price cap and also did not specify when the G7 aims to finalize the plan. It said that we invite all countries to provide input on the price cap's design and to implement this important measure, calling for a broad coalition in order to maximize effectiveness. We'll be right back. The Guardian elaborated more on the article and wrote, "The French Prime Minister Elisabeth Borne warned companies that energy could be rationed this winter, while Belgium's energy minister said the next 5 to 10 years could be difficult." Speaking alongside the Shell chief executive in Norway, the head of another energy company, Total Energies, Patrick Pouyanné, said Europe's governments and policymakers would have to plan for a future without Russian gas. Europe gas prices have soared in recent weeks, reaching almost 350 euros, about 299 pounds. A megawatt hour recently as countries rush to build up supplies before the winter. Soaring energy prices have helped oil and gas companies to record bumper profits, prompting demands for windfall taxes to help finance emergency support for struggling households and businesses. Shell made record profits of nearly £10 billion between April and June and promised to give shareholders dividends with £6.5 billion. Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson has sounded the alarm about the EU's energy crisis, warning that a difficult winter and dangerous disruptions are ahead if no action is taken by Europe. Speaking to reporters recently, Andersson said that Sweden was facing the prospect of a war winter because of Europe's energy crunch triggered by Ukraine-Russia conflict. The impact of the conflict was higher prices for gas and electricity and high anxiety over the prospects of a cold winter in Europe.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country. in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on July 27, 2022.
Some of our Friday prayer leaders took part in economic activities in the past. They failed in these activities because they did not know what they were doing. Others took advantage of the situation and they became a burden on the system, and some are still continuing with this. Never get involved in economic matters. The administration of clerical organizations is up to the people. Gentlemen, unfortunately, some are ashamed to say that seminaries are supported by the people. This is nothing to be ashamed of. Rather, it is something to be proud of. What this means is that they do not need the government or those in power to give them money. This is a big advantage. It allows them to easily stand by the people. You see, seminaries have sided with the people and have stayed alongside the people in many different cases. They have been able to easily confront the various governments and those in power. If there were those amongst the clergy who had connections or received funding from a certain place, they were not able to stand by the people and they remained behind. No, we receive funds from the people and there is nothing wrong with that. It is the same with the Friday prayers. People need to help and they do help. When you take part in economic activities, set up businesses and do these sort of things, people say, these people already have money. Not only will they not help you, they will also have expectations from you. So, these were some points about the behavior of a Friday prayer leader.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I would like to say a few things about the sermons now. First of all, it should be noted that the Friday prayer sermons and the Friday prayer leaders are spokesmen for the Islamic revolution. That's it. No one should expect anything other than this from the Friday prayer leader. He is a spokesman for the Islamic revolution. He explains the foundations of the revolution. He calls for what the revolution calls for, and he belongs to the revolution. It's always been like this. It's been like this throughout history. The Friday prayer leader will have carried out a great duty if he is able to convey religious and revolutionary concepts according to the needs of the present day. There are many concepts of the revolution that we once proclaimed, followed, and are still following to this day. But today, the same concepts should be explained and conveyed with a new language, with words that are suitable for the present age.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done